Welcome to Federal Insight, sponsored by Maximus. Here's today's moderator, Tom Temin.
Welcome and thanks for joining us. My guest today is Kathleen Featheringham. She's the VP of Artificial Intelligence and Machine Learning at Maximus. Kathleen, good to have you with us.
Great. Thank you for having me.
And we are talking about AI primarily, maybe a little machine learning also today, maybe even a little robotic process engineering, kind of the caboose to all of this sometimes. And I think one of the things that federal agencies often have trouble establishing, and they talk about it a lot, is the best use cases initially to bring in artificial intelligence, because you want something that brings success, but also something that brings value and not just a successful AI in and of itself. So what are your best ideas for choosing the use cases?
It's a great question. So we get asked this a lot in terms of, where do I start? What does it look like? What's going to get you the best results? I mean, the truth and honest answer is, don't fully know. But there's different things and better experiences that we can try and how we go about it. But the first part is really understanding what you're trying to get out of it, as opposed to what is the exact right use case for AI. It's more about, what are you struggling with? What are the problems, the mission elements, the things that you need to actually make things more successful? Starting there actually helps really define what are good use cases. And the reason for it is how are you going to be successful is really about how you're relieving the pains, the pressures, or being able to optimize and do more. That's where your success comes. AI has a lot of different facets, and it's really, quite honestly, complex and confusing. And there's not general definitions of all of what type, what things are. Everything, you know, where you hear a lot more in the news associated with generative AI. But there's a number of other types. So the other parts of that is for, you know, business leaders and government leaders to be successful is not that they have to know every single facet of what AI is and isn't. It's more about, hey, what's the issues? And then work with their technologists to be able to break it down for what type. So things that have heavy rote aspects to it, such as having to go through large quantities of documents or data or images and things like that. Those are ones where AI can quite honestly help a lot. It just depends on what type of output do you want. If you're asking it for the creativity part that we see in the news all over the place of, you know, hey, take this and generate creative thought, it may not be as strong there, but it could definitely be useful. So for perhaps maybe generating a list of ideas to start with. Here's things and places, or here's stuff that it's already found and gives you the locations of where it found it. So then you can use that to compile your list. Let's say you have a whole bunch of documents and you know that you need to be able to make references to certain sections of it. But the time it's going to take you to read 100 pages is pretty extensive to go through and find the exact things. So think of it as an assistant to be able to help you locate those. Then you can still do what humans are really good at, which is that critical thinking. So part of the best places for use cases is not to think of it as a replacement, to think of it more as where can it aid in the parts of the workflows, the processes that are there that you would want to put in. But then you're also obviously going to want to have kind of the checks and balances of it. So I kind of relate it to, there was things in the past that they've had, you know, different people were using it and getting results of AI that were faulty or not accurate. I would think of it more in this way. If, as a human, if you brought somebody brand new in, let's say out of whatever type of schooling they had, and you asked them to put together something for you, whether it's a document or a brief or things like that, would you just turn in what they gave you? Probably not. Would you go through it, fact check it, really refine it? Absolutely. And I think that's the really critical part for people to think about is why would you treat this different than you would treat some of your beginners and things that they would do? You would go ahead and do those. So again, it's more evolving. And then as the use cases, things are going to get better and they're going to keep getting better. They're even better than they were 6 months ago. So as it keeps evolving, how are you thinking about your own workflows and processes evolving? So again, for use cases, just to kind of sum it up, would be going through vast amounts of documents, finding things in it, being able to use it as a starter for, let's say you have communications and things that have pretty standard kind of formatting and things, having it have the starter part of it, so then you can go back in and get the more nuanced aspects of what you'd be looking for. So whether that is an analytical report, whether that is just an email and communications, those are great places. Other parts is, again, pulling things into the workflow of what you need. How many times do you go and do searches in different databases? If you, and let's say you have to search through 7 different ones, things like robotic process automation would be great for that. It can follow that routine process of here's the things that I do, pull them together, and then it brings it back to you.
So it sounds like a good strategy then is to ask your people doing the work, and then they'll have the best ideas, things that the data scientists and the IT people could not know because they're not doing that work that the people understand needs improvement.
I'd say it's somewhere in between. So one of the things that my colleagues and I have found that is really helpful is absolutely, you know, talk to what are your pain points, what are the things you're doing, but actually observing. I've spent a lot of time going and standing behind people for, show me how you do your job. What do you do? A lot of times we as humans do things that we don't even realize that we're doing because our brain is such a powerful supercomputer that we just inherently know certain things. So, because then I can ask more questions to say, hey, well, you did this. Why did you do that? Because that refinement of things of, you know, oh, well, I just know to do that if this happens. Those are the things that help you be able to train the different types of AI a lot better. So you get the initial things of what they think are the needs, but then you also really see it in action. So any of these types of emerging technologies, you can't just go straight off requirements. You have to see how it's going to be put into action, how the people would be interacting with it. But really importantly, like, what do they do today? Because how big of a change is it? And how could you start to incorporate it in that it doesn't actually cause a bigger bottleneck?
Right. In fact, you could even discover things you could eliminate doing and improve a process even before you get to the artificial intelligence part.
Absolutely.
And therefore, what would be left would have even more leverage in improvement.
Yeah, so I mean, one of the weird things that we find all the time is there's a lot of perception about what our belief or what. One of the things that we find all the time is that there's a lot of things that are more about perception than actual rules. So there will be perception that we have to do it this way versus an actual rule that says, no, you do have to do it that way. So when we have people actually walk it through, it's where you get to ask those questions. Then what they said earlier is great, but then a lot of the times they refine it further when they have to really think about how and why they're doing something, especially when you're trying to incorporate that. Because then you can actually say, well, what if I was able to give you something that would do this? Would that be helpful? Or would that be get you returns? And it almost becomes that like kind of human-centered design type of aspects there for your solutions as opposed to here, I'm just going to hand you something that meets this need.
All right. And maybe give us some examples you've seen recently where, wow, people did this and here's what happened.
Yeah, absolutely. So think of like communications writing, right? So a lot of great and brilliant writers, they are really good at what they do and how they formulate things. So, but it does take time to just even start pull together, again, what I was saying earlier, some of those pro forma, here's the things that you would need. And they say, oh, I only have an hour to write this, so I didn't get to get as in-depth or refine the areas of what I wanted. So what if we gave you more of the pro forma parts that it could generate to start? That way you can take more of that hour to really kind of craft and refine the key message that you want to get through. And so we worked pretty heavily back and forth of being able to say, hey, what is this? What would that format look like? Because a lot of times each writer has their own style and what is their preference. So rather than just saying, hey, this is a template that fits for everyone, you now can almost customize for individuals to say, here, this becomes your kind of pro forma template, as opposed to because that's your style, what's unique to you, and you're able to have them supported in that way, where a lot of tools previously were just built on what was the general practice template.
Sure, and that's a good example because it enables greater productivity on the person whose brain and experience and wisdom you really need, as opposed to, say, feeding something into a generative AI and hoping it comes out with a cogent piece of writing, which then you'd have to go back and check, and it might actually cost you time.
Absolutely. So, I mean, at Maximus, some of our internal communicators actually did a full study, and they did a study on communications associated with generated by AI, generated by humans, and then generated by AI, and then had humans come back with it. Across the board, that was where they got their most results, because humans could really concentrate on that message, the message of what it was and how you're getting the answer out, as opposed to the timeline. So I think of it this way. A lot of the times there's people say, hey, this is the part of that job, part of my job I have to do my real job. That's the parts where it's really good at. Let's break down the amount of time that you have to do things to be able to do what we're really paying you for in your job to do.
Yes, I was reading some recent decisions of the Merit Systems Protection Board, and these are 37, 40-page documents, and they cite a lot of prior case law and statutory references and so forth, and in there is, amongst all that, is serious prose about what their evaluation of the case is. So that's an example where all of this pro forma, as you put it, material could be gathered in quickly, and they could concentrate on the interpretation and maybe increase their throughput.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the interpretation of what does that mean in practice. So you can read and say, okay, here is the exact thing I've read it. Here's, you know, the statute or the things. But then the creativity and the critical thinking part comes into of how do I apply that now? And what does that mean for whether this organization, this policy, this business? I mean, right now, especially in AI, there is not a limitation on how many different government things are coming out, whether it was the executive order that came out in the fall and all of the things that are following it. So being able to have the ability to go through and say, okay, is there a policy already on this? Or is that, how do I find it? How do I put that in context for what we're doing? And it's changing so fast. That, like, hey, you have to make sure that you have the latest updates, the things, how do they correspond? And being able to do that, it's pretty significant. And the world of AI right now has a heavy amount of it.
Yeah, anybody that can clear out compliance will be welcomed, you know, or make that easier.
Absolutely.
And we're going to take a short break on that note. My guest today is Kathleen Featheringham. She's the VP of Artificial Intelligence and Machine Learning at Maximus. I'm Federal Drive host Tom Temin here on Federal Insights, sponsored by Maximus here on Federal News Network.
In today's federal government, security by design is key to achieving the highest levels of security compliance. From security consulting and architecture design to comprehensive managed services, Maximus delivers end-to-end protection of critical data, systems, and operations. We are a trusted cybersecurity partner, delivering cutting-edge solutions that enable government to securely operate in a digitally connected world, securing every aspect of your mission. Learn more at maximus.com/federal.
Welcome back to Federal Insight, sponsored by Maximus here on Federal News Network. My guest today is Kathleen Featheringham. She's the Vice President of Artificial Intelligence and Machine Learning at Maximus. I'm Federal Drive host Tom Temin. And we were talking about some of the use cases and the thinking around AI, but agencies also have a very real infrastructure and IT foundational aspect to have success in artificial intelligence. Tell us about some of those and what they need to think about.
Yeah, so for years there's been, and it will continue to be, big modernization efforts. And so how are you, and really what does that mean? How can the government take advantage of all of these new and emerging technologies at an enterprise scale? So there's a big difference between having something, you know, small, singular, running on, you know, one computer, a couple, versus being able to have it run at the enterprise level. And most importantly, responsibly. So AI is no different. That requires looking at certain things a little bit differently than how we've done it before. The reason for it is it's not just the same as any traditional software application. There are some big kind of nuances that come into play that have to be accounted for, and you don't want to do custom integration for every single one of these. So a lot of the things that we look into is how to really help take these things in and get it fast into operations, but in the right ways. So one of the kind of areas of that, some people refer to as ML ops. We take a much broader approach for model ops because there can be more than just machine learning types of models, but is how do you kind of build into the controls and measures into the systems so that you can bring different types of AI models and tools in safely you can actually monitor, know what they're doing. So a really good example of it is there's a lot of traditional AI that is a lot like software. You know, you have an input that goes in, and then the output comes out, and you, it's very refined, has a set of rules, and you know what's going to come out. With a lot of the things, generative AI is a good example of it. This gets a little bit more probabilistic. So what you put in and what you put out, it gives more flexibility so that output could be changing versus what is a traditional software. So one of the big things that's really important about that is to understand those parameters and how those things are changing. So when you think about bigger and larger infrastructure, they've been designed far more now for software, where you know very distinguishing, here's what comes in, here's what goes out. With AI, you have to be able to, how are we going to account for that? And how are we going to be able to have alerting to whether it needs to be refined back, or maybe that's a great thing that it you know, broadened and changed the parameters because it's actually giving you much better answers than you thought, but you need to be able to change your decision factors based off of that so that the parameters have changed.
Right, so in other words, the difference between regular software and AI is that the logic in the AI is constantly changing. So if you can understand what it is that has changed in the logic, whereas, you know, you run a COBOL program, the logic doesn't change for 40 years.
Yeah.
Only the inputs change. The logic changes in AI, and that's the secret sauce you need to really get your arms around.
It really is. Just one caveat, though, it's not for all AI. So there are different types of AIs that have that same kind of deterministic nature of software, and you can actually have that controlled down. The parameters are very solid. Then there are the ones that you can actually open up further, and then you can get that less deterministic type, and you get more into probabilistic. But yeah, you got it. It's basically, you know, as you think of human decisions, you base off a set of information, and you make a decision. So the machine is, in this aspect of AI, it's a bunch of algorithms that you've now said, hey, you can take in additional variables. And as you take in those additional variables, then the logic may change. So humans need to know what those things are and why it's changing. Again, because it could be a great change. So most of the time you think, oh, you don't want them to do that. It could actually be a great thing that they're recognizing stuff that you would have never seen. So, you know, those things like the really rote of
sure.
going through, and they may say, hey, this looks similar. You may not have thought about it, but what they're looking at could be pixels. So one of the things that, you know, think about it when you look at an image, you instantly know whether that's an image of a dog or a cat or things. Machines are more looking at it as pixels of, hey, pixels in this spot, and it may have around the bottom of it, it may have, you know, the fluffy sides there and that. That's how it's recognizing and training it to recognize that that's probably a dog. But that could also be the same where I've seen, there's all over the internet if you want to look for them, but like pictures of dogs versus like a loaf of bread. And like a loaf of bread, because it happened to be a tan, had a little bit of white around the parts of it and things too, where it's getting confused. And it's understanding that logic and learning. But in other cases, it may be, hey, that's a brand new type of machinery or things like that, that it's recognizing it that's the same, but you wouldn't have known to look for it.
Sure. Yeah, my experience is when we had a dog, loved it, but the loaf of bread was smarter.
Yeah.
So it'd be hard for an AI to take into account. I want to get back to this idea of model ops, because we do hear DevSecOps and so forth, a way to operationalize. Could this model of working, so to speak, this way of working then help agencies skip what could be a very long early generation of bespoke creations for each and every application, which could be discouraging and also expensive?
Yeah. I think you're exactly on point there. So this is it's the complementary portion to data ops and DevSecOps. This is, how do we do these? You don't want to do these all separately. You want to have it as the next evolution of it. It's where now you have data pipelines. You have the parts where you have things where you're controlling where data is going in and understanding of that. This is the same. This is now where you're building in the model pipelines that allow you to bring things in, test them, alerting all the aspects. And that way, from the whole idea of DevSecOps, you're trying to get from development securely into operations faster. This is all component of it, and it's just the add-on. So again, there's different tools, there's different things that are coming out there, and you don't want to have to say, hey, we're going to have to redo everything for every one of these. So it's absolutely that. It's a better way of being consistent, meeting in terms of standards that you would need, and understanding. And again, that opens up the door for a lot more creativity, where people can bring in a whole bunch of other things, whether it's from, you know, industry, academia, or built in-house, let's say in the federal government, gives you the ability to actually expand the types of capabilities you could have and use.
It seems like there's almost a need for an AI capability maturity model, if you will.
Absolutely. And so, and testing and validation, I can't say that enough. You know, there's a big difference between stuff that is built in the lab and then actually put against operational data, what we would call like put in production. And you have, and as part of the, you know, model ops in these parts too, is how can you test against production type of level data to know how it's going to perform, and prior to putting it in operations and actually using it.
Yes, in some ways it's parallel to physical infrastructure or aviation or other areas of engineering, where you could have a perfectly good operational design, but there are long-term effects that are very difficult to anticipate.
Yeah.
We've seen this over history. But the difference is, can you reset your AI? Suppose it's getting out of band.
Yes.
Can you almost roll back to the bare metal version of that ChatGPT algorithm or to that model for whatever it is, which worked when you first launched it? I mean, maybe it's necessary just to bring it back home every so often.
Absolutely. And so that's one of the, actually, that's one of the key components of parts of how you think about some of the model operations is you're constantly bringing things back in and out. So what used to be, especially for software, it didn't really matter what your environment was that you developed it in, because then you would go and do testing and then maybe you have bug fixes and things like that after that. But with AI, you have to think about it as a journey, and you got to think about it as a constant, not that it's a one and done, hey, you did it. Because more types of things and data come in, the parameters shift. You know, think about like when COVID happened, that throughout changed so many different models because it was such a unique situation and variables that you have to think about what models, is it appropriate now for that segment? But then as COVID started to go down, you know, hey, do you have to refine them back? What does that look like? So it is definitely a continuous process of bringing back from into back into development in that type of ecosystem and pushing back out and continuously monitoring. So you're exactly right. If it goes in places where you don't want it to go, or it's not returning it first, you have to be alerted. So that's also a really critical thing, is having the insight and guidance that things are shifting, and whether that's good or bad, but then being able to revert back and having that full backup plan of, hey, here we can revert completely to this. That's absolutely a portion of it.
All right. In the last 30 seconds we have, your top three pieces of advice for getting started so that you're on a trajectory toward success.
Yeah. Especially if you're thinking about Gen AI, try it out. There's so many different ones that are out there in consumer level, because before actually really understanding what it is, and you just hear it theoretically, you kind of got to get your hands on it so that you can conceptualize how best to use it and for your use cases and what could you do. So that's probably the number one. The number two and three are really going to be around how do you bring it into your existing workflows, and then how do you do it in a way that you don't have to do custom every single time, so that you have a more open and modular thinking about it. So, because tools are just going to keep getting better and better.
Well, thank you for some great thinking.
Thank you.
Good to have you with us today. Kathleen Featheringham is the Vice President of Artificial Intelligence and Machine Learning at Maximus. I'm Federal Drive host Tom Temin, and you're listening to Federal News Network. For more on this discussion, please visit federalnewsnetwork.com and search Maximus.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights, sponsored by Maximus on Federal News Network.